court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Co-host Tommy Smurl, and I am just a dude.
Tommy, we're back in the studio, and it feels kind of lonely down here, just me and you.
I know, it's not the same as a rocking audience at a live show, is it?
No, it was a pretty awesome experience. It was
a little scary at first.
It was a little scary, but then the Maker's Mark kicked in a little bit, the liquid courage.
I thought you were going to say the adrenaline.
That too. Well, I mean, whiskey is basically adrenaline in a bottle, right? Isn't it?
I guess so. Whiskey and beer, whatever gets you through the night, right?
Yeah, that's whatever gets you through the night.
Yeah, that's a song. Yeah. You got that. Yeah, probably a little before your time, but that's right. But yeah, I was a little intimidated going into that. I've been in live productions performing on stage before, probably. You know, been a significant character in over 20 shows, performed some of them over 1,000 people. But this was more intimidating because nobody's giving you your lines and your movements and everything else. You're on your own, pal. And if you fall or if you get tongue-tied, you're just too bad.
Yeah.
There's no editing. We can always go back and edit from here, but
that's right.
Right there, you just fail in public.
That's called working without a safety net.
I guess so. Well, we could always just bury it, and it would. I mean, let's look on the bright side. There was less than 200 people, wouldn't you say? I think the theater held 190.
Yeah.
So there was. You know, I don't think we had standing room only. So it's a little less. So we could have disappointed. You know, less than 200 people. Whereas when we release these, there's a few more than 200 listening. So,
that's true.
So you know, we minimized the impact of our loss if we didn't do well. But I think it turned out okay.
Yeah, I think. And not everybody there had even listened to us before, too. So I think we may have picked up a few new listeners. So
yeah, that was nice of people that hung around afterwards so they could talk to us and said they, you know, a few of them said, we've never heard of Court Appointed before, but we're definitely going to start downloading it. So
yeah,
that's always nice to hear. And then some of the other ones that had met us, we had a Brad Heffron and his wife come up to us. We signed his wife's shirt and then he later sent us a email with a suggestion for a topic and how much he enjoyed meeting us, and we enjoyed meeting him. But the funny thing that he said that kind of got me is he said, I kind of don't like going to the live shows and meeting the podcast people because, he said, you get a vision in your head of what they look like. And sometimes when you meet them for real life, you're disappointed.
In IRL.
So I said, well, how do you feel about us? He goes, well, Michael looks pretty much like I thought he would. You don't look a thing like I thought you would. I said, is that good or bad? And I never really got an answer. The only thing he mentioned was, well, the hair was a surprise. So I'm not sure what that meant. So I may have crushed his podcast dreams there. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you kind of look like how I expect Tommy to look like, but I've known you my whole life, so I don't
know. Yeah, so what else would you expect? But I know what he means. It's like when you read a book about something, and then later that book becomes a movie.
Yeah.
You know, you created these characters in your head while you read the book, and sometimes they cast somebody in the movie that's like, no, that's not right.
Well, yeah.
And it ruins a movie for you.
Well, the one I can think of immediately was casting Tom Cruise as Jack Reacher, mm-hmm. because I read those books before. And I mean, Jack Reacher is supposed to be this like 6'6", like massive mountain of a man. And it's like, you know, Tom Cruise does not exactly come to mind for that.
No, he's like 5'4", 5'5".
Yeah.
Scientology guy.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. It's definitely a Scientology guy, but I'm not sure how tall he is. But anyway.
That's about what he is, I think. 5'5" really? Or something like that. Maybe 5'6" at the most.
Well, but I got to tell you, but he was actually really good as Jack Reacher. So, I mean.
Well, he was standing on a box the whole time.
Maybe so. Tom Cruise is a pretty good actor, though. I mean, say what you want about his beliefs and whatnot. He seems a little crazy jumping on Oprah's couch, but he's a good actor.
But I know what he means by that about sometimes that disappoints you. I know that I just quit reading books so that now I can enjoy all the movies because I have no preconceived perceptions of what they should look like.
Is that why you quit reading books?
Yeah, so just don't read any books. Listen, children at home, don't read any books. You'll never be disappointed at the movie. Just a little tip from old Uncle Tommy.
For anybody that's curious or wants to hear the live episode, we actually are going to release it next Monday, I believe.
Yeah, what, the 8th?
I think so, yes.
That's May 8th.
May 8th.
We'll be releasing it. Yeah. Sawbones has already released theirs. They released theirs today, Sunday, which is the day we're recording this.
Yeah, and it was on Fluoride. I got to watch that one live. It was a good episode.
I got to watch the beginning, and then I had charge of Charlie, and Charlie was yelling at her mommy on stage, which was distracting for her, so I had to remove her from the premises and hide down in the green room. And then Still Buffering will be releasing theirs Tuesday the 2nd.
I didn't get to listen to Still Buffering because I was downstairs in the green room getting ready for our episode. So
sweating it out.
I know.
Pounding a few beers or whatever to get ready.
Furiously at my notes.
And they had us some local brews back there. That was nice.
Yeah, it was really nice.
What was that called? The Land Grant.
Yeah, Land Grant.
Yeah.
That was the IPA, I think.
Well, I think they were all Land Grant. They were just the different ones from it or something, but
I can't remember.
Yeah, but I can't remember. I had too many of them.
I got one or two in the fridge. I brought one or two home.
Oh, souvenirs, huh? That's
right. Well, yeah, for a little bit. Yeah. I might have one of those souvenirs later today. I don't know. this episode was suggested by Corey Navis, and that was on the Facebook Court Appointed page.
Well, we'd like everybody to join and come visit us and
join the
see the updates, make the suggestions, see what the discussion is.
And I think she had taken a picture of a truck and said, not responsible for broken windshield, !! Stay back. And she wanted to know about the liability and things with regards, does this hold any water? And it was a really interesting topic, and it generated quite a bit of conversation on the page. There was a lot of discussion about it, people putting in their 2 cents. So we thought we would cover this topic.
Well, all right. Let's cover it.
So before we start getting into the question about these truck disclaimers and things like that, it's necessary to go back to our old friend negligence.
Our old friend negligence?
That's right. And negligence is composed of 4 different elements. And I think we've covered this several times. And the 4 elements of negligence are duty, breach, cause, and damages. And
that's duty.
Thank you. And those are the ones that
I'd disappoint you if I didn't react.
And those are the 4 elements of basically any negligence case. So that being said, the aforementioned warning, which said not responsible for broken windshield, stay back, is that going to make it so that the truck does not have any liability for things flying off their vehicle? The short answer to that is going to be no. It probably does not.
Good. I want them to be responsible.
That's the end of the episode. Thanks for listening.
We'll see you next week. We better give them the long answer or else we never made it to the approaching the bench.
So. That's right. Well, maybe get a bit more detail.
Our sponsor will be a bit disappointed.
So, as I said, the short answer is no, it probably does not. But it kind of made me start thinking about this from a legal point of view, which is good since I'm a lawyer, and thinking about some different arguments you can make.
I usually think about things from an illegal point of view.
Well, good for you.
I'm not a lawyer.
So I believe that a truck driver is probably going to be, or a truck driver or a company or whatever, the truck in general is going to be responsible for anything that flies out of or off their truck. If they don't strap something down right and it flies off and smashes into your car, they're probably going to be liable. This is usually a traffic offense, too. A lot of states have laws which say that if you don't properly secure something, then you're going to be cited for that, regardless if it flies off the truck or not. Just if they see something that's not improper load or improper securing a load, that's going to be something the police will cite you for. So it depends, I guess. We're also, when we talk about these, it depends on the severity of the accident it causes. If it's just a small rock that flies off and puts a crack in your windshield, it's going to be a bit harder to prove the kind of whole evidence type scenario. Whereas if it's like a, what is that, final destination type situation where you have a log flying off the back of a truck that comes through and
through your windshield.
Through your windshield.
And impales your face.
Yeah, that might be a bit, that might be investigated a bit more by the police, I would think.
I would think so. But, you know, there's been a lot of serious accidents concerning those type of things. Loads not properly secured and logs falling off and steel beams and things like that.
Yeah, I mean.
And it's like, you know, that's one of the things we talked before about truckers' logs. And
yeah.
Besides the ones at the rest stop. And that they're supposed to keep track of. They're supposed to check these things every so often to make sure that straps are secured and stuff. I mean, there's a whole checklist of federal transportation requirements.
Yeah.
That they have to comply with to do that. And, you know, the problem is that starts conflicting with the money and the profits. Because the more you stop and follow these guidelines, the longer it's taking you to get there, and time is money. They're wanting to get to the other end. So there's a real conflict for the drivers and stuff to comply with some of these things because they want to get over the road. That's how they make money.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you hit on that is that there are a lot of regulations for trucks, like about how they strap things down, whether or not they put a cover over it. Like dump trucks, I know, for example, are supposed to have a cover over the top of the dump trucks whenever they're carrying things, that stuff doesn't go flying out the top. Oftentimes you see when they put the load in there too, that, you know, if you see it cresting over the top of it, that might be an indicator they're not actually, they're a little overloaded.
Right. So,
now the interesting thing whenever I was researching this is I thought about what could that sign actually do, the not responsible for broken windshield, stay back. What could that possibly do, or what benefit might the company have for that? And I came up with an idea, and I don't know if this is, I haven't really seen this in practice before, but it's an argument for an assumption of the risk affirmative defense. Now, assumption of the risk is an affirmative defense that's often used in civil matters, especially negligence actions, basically to argue that the defendant is not liable for the plaintiff's damages as the plaintiff knowingly took part in some part of this dangerous activity. So in this instance, my thought process is that if something strikes your car and you were following closely behind the truck, then there could be an argument that even though they were maybe negligent by not strapping down or not securing it closely, that had you not been following so close, that you would not have been struck by the debris. And I could see them using this sign as kind of a setup for that you were put on notice that, you know, following too close, that things may come out, and that you basically assumed the risk by tailgating this person. So now it's not a perfect defense for it, because, you know, it's going to be something that's going to be litigated.
Well, it might mitigate it anyway, because some states have, like, partial responsibility, and they'll say, like, well, they were 70% responsible, but you were 30% responsible. And
right.
They actually assign a ratio of guilt or whatever.
Yeah, you're talking about comparative negligence, contributory negligence, things like that.
Yeah.
Which we can probably get into an episode on that in and of itself. That's a very interesting topic. So,
you know what that made me think of, though?
What's that?
Is when the story that you told in the live show about Bobby Brown, about when he got arrested.
Yeah.
And for the way he was dancing with the girl on stage.
Yeah.
Well, if he'd have had a good lawyer, the lawyer might have been able to get him off with just a traffic citation for tailgating. Just following too close.
Well, from the sounds of Bobby Brown had no trouble getting himself off. So. The other thing that, you know, we're looking about this topic about these rocks and things that they're caused by these trucks is that I think there is probably going to be a difference between something that comes out of the back of the truck and something that's going to be kicked up from the road by the truck. So I want to get into the differences between that. But maybe before that, do you have any motions you would like to make, Tommy?
Well, counselor, I would like to make a motion to approach the bench to pay court costs.
You may proceed, sir.
First and only customer on the docket for today is HelloFresh.
HelloFresh wants to make cooking more fun, so they focus on the whole experience, not just the final plate. Tommy and I had a chance to cook ours together, and boy, did we have a blast.
Especially for two inexperienced guys. But HelloFresh likes to think of themselves as a farm-to-box company, because they want everyone to have access to fresh ingredients that inspire great meals. But they don't stop there. It means even more than that. They're proud to be a fork-to-feel-good company, too, because when you cook and eat delicious and healthy meals, you want to keep doing it again and again. Mary and I work with the outdoor theater, and we have rehearsals late at night. And when you get done, you're coming home at 9 o'clock, you haven't had dinner. The last thing you want to do is cook. It's easier to run through, grab fast food and have that. But that's not healthy for you.
It's not healthy.
No. And these are easy, healthy meals that you can take them from the box and have them on the plate in 30 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, I was amazed. I mean, the recipe you're making, it seems like it's going to be a pretty complicated process, but it's not. They lay out instructions.
You have the cards with all the directions, and there's usually only 5 or 6 steps to it. And you see the picture and you say, wow, I'm never going to cook something that looks like that. But you follow the directions and it works that way.
So each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone, from novices to seasoned home cooks short on time.
They currently have a classic box, a veggie box, and a family box. Customers can order 3, 4, or 5 different meals per week designed for either 2 or 4 people, and new recipes are created every week.
HelloFresh actually employs 2 full-time registered dietitians on staff who review each recipe to ensure it's nutritionally balanced.
Our meal that we made was, I fixed a Hunan cumin beef stir fry.
Not human cumin, as you kept saying.
Yeah, I thought it was a human cumin beef stir fry, and that was not correct. That would have been a totally different kind of meal, maybe found somewhere where there's cannibals.
And I made a winner-winner orzo chicken dinner.
And we actually, Riley videoed some of this for us, and we'll be posting it on YouTube, our cooking experience.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
Yeah, it got a little frantic sometimes. I mean, me using more than one burner at a time, and we were sharing the oven and cooking 2 completely different meals and chopping things and mincing things, and apparently a strainer is not the same that you use for mincing garlic.
But no, it is not.
It worked, though.
It did.
It came through, and it worked. And the food was good. I mean, when I can cook a meal like that, that says something, because I have no experience. I make cereal, and I grill burgers. That's the extent of my cooking experience. And I made a gourmet meal.
But my whole thing with the HelloFresh was, it was more than just the food. I mean, the food was delicious, but it was a super fun experience. We had a blast making them.
Well, that's true. We did have fun, and it turned out to be good. They've got the exact quantities in there, so there's no wasted food. You don't have to guess at the ingredients. You just simply follow the directions on the card, and the meals turn out fantastic.
So right now, you can get $30 off your first week of HelloFresh. All you need to do is visit HelloFresh.com and enter the code COURT30.
That's COURT30 to get $30 off your first week with HelloFresh.
And be looking for that YouTube video, Tommy and myself out there cooking some HelloFresh.
Yeah, we'll put a court-appointed hashtag. We'll release it on our Facebook site so people can find it. We'll probably even tweet it if our tweeters are working.
I think tweeters might be working.
That's good. HelloFresh.
So before we're talking about HelloFresh, I was talking about how I think there's going to be a difference between things that come out of the back of a truck versus things that are kicked up.
Somehow, when you say that, I thought you were going to say the difference between things that come out of the back of a truck as opposed to come out of the front of the truck.
That would be it.
I don't know why. It just looked like you were headed that direction.
There'd be a difference, too. As I said, the things that come out of the back of the truck are probably almost always going to be the truck's responsibility. They could have that possibility of the assumption of the risk, affirmative defense thing. But the rock or something kicked up from the road is kind of a different story. And that is probably not going to be the truck's fault, I do not believe, because we're going to get back to our negligence. And you have to ask yourself, under a theory of negligence, what duty did the truck actually breach by kicking up a rock from the roadway?
They dutied on the roadway.
Well, the answer is they probably did not. I mean, they're just they're just driving along, and if a rock gets kicked up, I mean.
Now, here's where I see a dilemma. If the truck is hauling rocks.
Right.
And a rock breaks your windshield.
Yes.
Are you going to have to find the rock and prove it was rock that came from within the truck or from without the truck? and say, "Your Honor, we have clear DNA evidence that this rock was in the rock in the back of the truck with the other rocks," or "Your Honor, this rock was on the ground. We disagree. It was on the ground and was kicked up." And I mean, it's that happens all the time. And you get your windshield cracked, and it's not the responsibility of the vehicle head. You don't have to chase them down and get their license plate number to get your insurance to fix a windshield.
That's true. And I mean, that's going to be one of those questions. It's probably going to be handled by the insurance company, because they're going to say, "Well, not our responsibility, because that was obviously a rock from the roadway." And you're going to say, "Well, obviously it was a rock from the back of the truck." So it might come down to saying what the person's actual statement is when they file a claim with the insurance company. If they say, "I saw a rock come out of the back of the truck and hit my windshield," I mean,
well, I would say that too, if I was trying to get them to pay for it.
Well, I mean, you got to tell the truth. So, I mean, if you didn't see it, then you didn't see it. So, I know there's all these jokes about lawyers being unethical and stuff like that, but, you know.
But they're not, are they?
I'm not.
Just because they have their own money tree in the backyard.
I mean, you can't change the facts to make your case. All you can do is take the facts and make your case.
But you could say, "You know, if this was the way your story read, it would help you out a lot more." "Oh, well, you know what? Maybe I did see that rock fall out of the back of that truck."
Well, no, I mean, there's nothing to say. Like, if I'm talking to somebody and they're like, "Oh, I don't know where the rock came from," I could possibly say to them, "Well, the reason I'm asking this is because if we don't know where the rock came from, then it's going to be an issue."
It came from the truck.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not telling them to say that, but I'm just asking them, did it come from the back of the truck or not?
You can lead a horse to water, but you can't lead a witness.
Yeah, I would never, you know, try to put words in their mouth like that, but I'm going to give them every opportunity to tell me where it came from. So,
of course, my mother used to say, "You can't lead a horse to water, but you can lead a horticulture." I don't know why she had some strange sayings.
That's a good saying. So when I was trying to think about a situation where there might be a good way to prove liability for a truck where a rock is kicked up off the road. So maybe say like the truck is hauling wood pallets in the back or something like that, and then a rock comes off the road and hits you. Then how would you go about trying to prove liability for that? And the only thing I really come up with is that maybe under these trucking requirements, they're required to have mud flaps. And maybe they didn't have mud flaps on there. So you might look at other things like that. And so the only thing I can think of when I think of mud flaps, and this is something else, is those Yosemite Sam ones that say, yeah, "Back off."
I was thinking the same thing too when you were talking about the sign that said, yeah, "Stay back 200 feet. I'm thinking that he's got a picture of Yosemite Sam with his pistols in the air.
It says "Back off."
Yeah.
So my real question that lead me to think about are those Yosemite Sam mud flaps, are those kind of a legal disclaimer? Could you use that as some sort of argument? Yosemite Sam gave you a warning.
I say, back off, boy.
If I was a defense attorney, if the truck had that, I'd love to put my assumption of the risk, affirmative defense, that my Yosemite Sam mud flaps that said "back off" can put them on notice that they should stay back.
Yosemite Sam was clearly stating they were to back off, and they failed to do so. Therefore, the liability falls with the owner.
If you can't have fun whenever you're
litigating a case.
Yeah, litigating a case. I don't know what you can do. So
yeah, that's the time for legal frivolity.
Well, especially if you're in front of a jury and, you know, you can kind of make the jury entertained. That's always
a plus.
Yeah. There's nothing worse than trying to be funny in front of a jury, though, and it just goes flat.
That has no sense of humor.
Oh, it's bad.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
It's like bombing, huh?
Oh, yeah. It's
like a stand-up comedian bombing on stage.
But it's kind of worse because you're not really supposed to be funny in court.
And somebody's life is in your hands?
Well, you know, you got to kind of weigh what kind of case it is.
So you don't make jokes at a murder trial or something?
I think that's frowned upon.
Is it? That's like the Ross Geller kind of frowned upon?
So, but as I was saying, if a truck's required to have mud flaps and they didn't, then they kicked up a rock and it shatters your windshield, then they probably would be liable because based on this negligence theory again, they basically breached their duty by failing to have the proper mud flaps in place.
But even with mud flaps, it still happens.
Right. But your whole theory is basically going to be that the mud flaps are to prevent this from kicking up and they didn't have them contrary to whatever regulation they're supposed to. So it could be their fault.
You know, they had something along those lines with the railroad when I worked for it. Most of the area that I covered, that I supervised, was coal territory. And even though most people think of coal being transported as lumps of coal, most coal is pulverized and it's more of a powder when you transport it. You can get more in the cars that way, for one thing, so you can ship more coal that way. But what would happen as these cars would go through towns, that powdered coal would blow off the top of the cars and everything in proximity got covered with coal dust. So they came up with the idea, well, the coal companies or the railroad has to start putting covers on all of them. Well, that would have taken so much time and been so expensive, they didn't want to do that. So they came up with a process where they basically put a plastic coating over the top as they finish off the load of coal, so that this plastic kind of puts a seal on top of it and keeps it from blowing anywhere. And it's all biodegradable, so they can still just dump the coal right in at the other end.
Like some sort of like polymer type sealant that goes on top.
Forms like a seal on top. And that would, that minimized it enough that it, I won't say it did 100% job, but it minimized it enough where they were able to win that argument.
Not a bad.
Railroad has a lot of lawyers.
They do.
They don't send in one. They got a team.
They have a whole team?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is the one that's in charge, is he considered the conductor?
No, he's the engineer.
He's the engineer?
He runs the train.
The head lawyer?
Yeah.
So we're talking about the difference in evidentiary issues, because it is going to be an issue with regards to these rocks. And this is actually talked about on the during the discussion on the Facebook page, and it was brought up by Juliet Cantu Donaldson that if you had a dash cam.
Who? How'd you say that?
Juliet Cantu hyphen Donaldson.
Oh, well, she's lucky I didn't have to say that name.
She's very lucky.
She'd never recognized her own name.
She suggested, though, if you have a dash cam, that that would show some pretty good evidence as to what, you know, where the rock came from.
Well, that's true. And, you know, it's funny. Have you noticed that dash cams seem to be so much more prevalent in Europe than they are here?
Yeah, and especially in Russia.
Yeah. I mean, they have, police have dash cams, but I don't think that many people here have dash cams. But in Europe, it's like everybody has to have one. And I'm not sure what that's like, but those Russian videos with all those dash cams, that's just unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, they capture some crazy, crazy stuff. Like if you're watching a video, a dash cam, it's like you can just bet that it probably came from Russia.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just a popular thing there. But it kind of looks like over there, they don't have quite as many established traffic laws as they have here. Because it just seems like a free-for-all when you're watching those dash cam videos. It's like you have to be very macho to drive in Russia. It's, get out of the way, comrade. Here I come.
Well, I think probably it's one of those type things where only the crazy ones make it on the internet. You don't see the dash cam of somebody driving.
So it makes you feel like they're all like that, but that's just the ones you're seeing, huh?
Yeah, pretty much.
Because it's like, a four-way stop? I'll take the challenge. I'm going straight through. Anyone who gets in my way, it's too bad. They just plow right into each other, go around. It's unbelievable. Stop in front of trolley cars and get run over.
Yeah. The guy who, you see like a guy like hurtle over top of a car that comes careening out of control at him.
But they don't get hurt. Russians are tough. They're tough SOBs. I mean, they go, you see them flying through windshields and stuff, and they get up and start yelling at the guy that ran into them.
Unless their shoes come flying off. There's a theory on the internet that basically if you see a video where somebody gets hit and their shoes come off, they probably died.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think these guys could take it.
Not if their shoes come off. It's proven.
What if you're not wearing shoes? You have a better chance of survival?
Maybe so. I don't know. So aside from having a dash cam, it's probably going to come down just to testimony. And there is going to be an issue of proving where the debris came from, especially if it's a rock and in the back of a truck versus a rock kicked up from the truck. That's going to be basically whatever you say to the insurance or testify to.
So if he's carrying a load of logs, you're better off to be able to say a log hit my windshield.
Yeah.
You have a clearer cut case than a rock hit my windshield. Probably. And he's carrying rocks.
Unless they don't have their Yosemite Sam mud flaps. So you might be okay then. So there's one interesting theory that came up, and I never really thought about with regards to basically debris flying off of a truck. But it's a legal theory of res ipsa loquitur. And that's
ipsa loquitur.
Yeah, and that's basically a Latin term, which means the thing speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it is it's an English tort theory, which basically can be applied to negligence because negligence is a tort. And it was first put forth in the case of Brin v. Bodel in 1863.
Was this in England or was it here?
No, it's English.
English.
Yes.
Okay.
From 1863. So even though it was after we had kind of separated from England amicably, mm-hmm. or...
I don't think amicably is the way to go about that.
Eh, whatever. We told them to get out. They left. I don't know.
You had to be there.
Yeah, I had to be there. Alternate facts. Hashtag.
Alternative facts.
So, basically,
a bear came flying.
So, basically, a barrel of flour came flying out of a second-story loft and hit the plaintiff on his head. And the plaintiff was not able to offer any direct evidence as to why the owner of the barrel of flour had breached their duty of care. Basically, all he knew was that I was walking down the street, and all of a sudden this barrel of flour came flying out of the second story and hit me on the head.
Well, now, are you telling me the guy survived getting hit over the head with a barrel of flour from the second floor?
Evidently so.
Now, he must have been from Russia.
Maybe so.
And he kept his shoes on.
I don't know. I don't know if he died or not.
There was a Russian immigrant that survived.
I don't know if he died or not, but basically the only evidence that was 1863. It was a long time ago. The only evidence that was put on is that a barrel of flour.
He
came
survived,
out.
But they thought he was dead because the flour coated him white. He went running down the street howling after that. And they all thought he was his own ghost.
That sounds reasonable.
Where's Scooby-Doo when you need him?
So essentially the case was dismissed, but he appealed it because basically, he's like, this isn't right. I got hit on the head by a barrel of flour. So the appellate court held, and this was kind of the first time that this was put forth, is that the accident itself proved sufficient circumstantial evidence to establish a breach of the duty of care. So basically,
duty.
If a barrel of flour comes flying out of the second story, then there must have been some breach of duty of care because that just doesn't normally happen. So that was kind of the holding of that. And that's the theory of res ipsa loquitur.
Well, so let me put this in layman's or not very smart guy's terms, which is what I'm most familiar with. So that what they're saying is that he doesn't have to prove that there was some type of negligence involved. It's just a matter of common sense that barrels of flour should not be flying out of second floor windows and hitting passerbys.
Right. We got to think about under a theory of negligence.
I would agree with that logic.
But no, it's very sound. There's four elements to proving a negligence case: that there was a duty, they breached that duty, and then I've said this 1,000 times, the cause and damages. Mm-hmm. So essentially, that by putting forth the theory of res ipsa, you eliminate the first two, that there was a duty and they breached it, because you really don't know that how they did it, but obviously it happened somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So the judge in this case, I have to mention him because he had a pretty epic name. His name was Baron Pollock.
Baron Pollock?
Yeah, P-O-L-L-O-C-K. That's pronounced Pollock, wouldn't it be?
Pollock?
Pollock? Baron Pollock?
Baron Pollock?
I don't know. However you say it. Pollock, Pollock. Anyway.
You're asking me?
Yeah, right.
I'm like the last person to ask.
you're the worst with name pronunciation. So
Baron Pollock.
Yeah, there you go. So basically, his quote says, "I think it would be wrong to lay down as a rule that in no case can a presumption of negligence arise from the fact of an accident. Suppose in this case the barrel had rolled out of the warehouse and fallen on the plaintiff. How could he possibly ascertain from what cause it occurred? It is the duty of the person who keeps the barrels in a warehouse to take care that they do not roll out. And I think that such a case would, beyond all doubt, provide a prima facie case of negligence. A barrel could not roll out of a warehouse without some negligence, and to say that a plaintiff who was injured by it must call witnesses from the warehouse to prove negligence seems to me to be preposterous."
I have to agree with the old Baron.
Yeah.
There, that, I mean, I guess it's okay to laugh about that 200 years later, but I mean, you know, it cannot be a standard practice to have loaded barrels flying out of second floor windows, and there's not someone responsible. You should not have to go in and ascertain who did fail to do what, you know? Yeah.
I don't care what happened. The barrel came out of there.
And if this is your standard operating practice, it needs to change.
He said that the present case upon the evidence comes to this. A man is passing in front of the premises of a dealer in flour, and there falls down upon him a barrel of flour. I think it apparent that the barrel was in the custody of the defendant who occupied the premises and who was responsible for the acts of his servants who had the control of it. And in my opinion, the fact of its falling is prima facie evidence of negligence, and the plaintiff who is injured by it is not bound to show that it could not fall without negligence. But if there are any facts of inconsistent with negligence, it is for the defendant to prove them.
That's just excellently worded. People spoke and wrote so much better 200 years ago than they do now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's terrible when you read things now compared to the way we used to. What happened to us? We were so much more civilized at one point. Now it's LOLs and BTWs and who knows what.
IRLs.
Yeah, something. I don't even know what that one is.
In real life.
Oh, I thought that was I thought you were talking about like a URL.
No. Or TRL.
That's a computer thing.
TRL.
That's a, what's his name, show?
Carson Daly.
Carson Daly, yeah.
URL is the internet thing. It's
yeah.
That's what you type into the.
That's what I was thinking when you said IRL. That's a computer thing. What is that? And so, then there's gigabits and megabytes and little bits and naughty bits. I don't know.
So applying that case to the truck case, my thought was is that if you have a truck that's hauling rocks or lumber, and that rock or lumber comes flying out of the back of the truck, regardless if the truck driver says that they took all the adequate precautions and strapped it down or whatever, that they probably have breached a duty of care under this res ipsa theory, because generally rocks and lumber don't come flying out of the back of a truck without some sort of breach of that duty of care. So basically, I think the theory of res ipsa might apply to something like that.
Well, now there is one exception.
What's that?
If you're hauling a load of lumber and a piece of that lumber goes flying off your truck, as long as you yell timber out the window, you're free and clear because you gave fair warning. It's just like on the golf course. If you yell four, you can nail people in the head. You just got to yell four before the contact is made.
Well, that's what I was going to say. What if you're a dump truck and you're hauling golf balls and they come flying out and you yell four?
That's right.
It's fine.
That's right. That's okay. As long as you yell it out the window first.
So now as the court case points out, res ipsa only establishes kind of a prima facie case, which basically means at first face or at first appearance. So
at first face. So if you're two-faced, it's the first one.
Yeah. So that basically establishes a rebuttable presumption that the accident was the cause of the person who had control of that offending item. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, you know, there still would have to be a case about it. It's not just saying that, you know, you win the case automatically, but it just basically is a rebuttable presumption that says that it probably was their fault that this flower came flying out.
So it has more to do with who's got to prove what. You don't have to prove their negligence. They have to prove they weren't.
Pretty much, yeah. You know, maybe like a, I don't know, maybe there's an earthquake and there was some sort of, you know, act of God that.
Or somebody vandalized their truck maybe or something like that.
Right. But again, they still are going to have some sort of duty under.
Duty.
Yeah. Negligence all comes down to duty. So
well, don't now, be negligent with your duty.
Now, one interesting thought process that I kind of had when talking about these trucks that are carrying different items and things like that is when you have commercial carriers hauling these types of things, there's going to be a lot of contracts. And these contracts are probably going to try to shift the liability from who owns the item versus who's hauling the item. And these contracts are really long and they have lots of different things in there that try to shift this liability. And I thought that might be an interesting episode for us to talk about. But I think that's going to be a whole episode in and of itself. We can talk about that. And we'll probably.
Because you have a lot of different combinations. Some trucks are owned by companies and have their own drivers. And everything is all under one umbrella, shall we say. Mm-hmm. Other ones, you have independent contractors who own their own trucks and then haul stuff for companies. So there's two separate ones. And then in other ones, you have drivers who rent trucks and work for other companies. So you basically have three different entities involved in that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of different options that are involved in these things.
And those kinds of agreements, the whole goal is to try to shift the liability away from you and onto somebody else. And that's essentially what
that's the American way. You don't want to be responsible for anything. Shift it to somebody else.
That's the lawyer way.
That's what it's all about. We don't want to be responsible.
Why should you be responsible for some accident that somebody noticed?
That's right. Why should you be found guilty for a crime that somebody else noticed something? When that guy's billboard that somebody posted?
I think it was from The Simpsons, wasn't it? Or
I don't know, but the billboard was a real one or something.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
There's also a Simpsons line, too, where same Lionel thing. Hutz, Phil Hartman, says something. Why should you pay for a crime that somebody noticed?
So call our law firm today. Do we cheat them and how?
Well, that's going to bring us to Legal Briefs is a part of the show where we go over some different legal theories that we talked about. Usually it's me asking Tommy if he remembers what it means, what I said. So,
and I rarely do. But you know one thing that was really neat?
What's that?
The audience participating with us when we did Legal Briefs in there at the live show. That was really cool to hear the audience be on top of it and do that along with us. I wish we could have picked them up on the microphone. That was cool.
And I liked how they kind of, you could sometimes hear people shout things out too. It's kind of funny because they were asking questions and things like that. So
you were talking about having to edit out a lot of the things that I say and somebody yelled, keep them in, leave them in. And leave you thought he said, reel him in. He said, reel him in? I can't reel him in. Or something to that effect. No, leave them in. No, don't leave them in. I'll be shunned by the general public.
Well, the first term is negligence. What are the elements of negligence?
DDBC. Duty, damages, breach, and cause.
That's it.
I remembered it with a moniker.
That's right. That's how I learned
it. Or a mnemonic or something, but it's not really a mnemonic because I didn't make a word out of it. I couldn't think of a word with DDBC.
An acronym,
yeah.
That's how I remembered it. That's how I learned it in law school. So duty, breach, cause, damages.
I got it. I didn't get it last time. You gave it to me one other time, and I didn't even get the duty. And that was what you were most disappointed. You thought I'd at least get duty.
I think this might be the third time that negligence has made an appearance on our legal brief. So third time's a charm.
There's a lot of negligence involved in the law. Both on the lawyer's part and on the defendant's part.
The next term is assumption of the risk.
Assumption of the risk. I think the example you used is when the sign said stay back 200 feet. If you were closer than 200 feet when it happened, then you were assuming the risk because you were warned and you violated that warning.
Right. And that's the context I used it in this episode.
Right.
That's not necessarily all at assumption.
Not the only thing.
Yeah. Assumption of risk is essentially an affirmative defense that you use in a civil matter to say that basically the plaintiff's own actions should
contributed to the.
Yes, exactly.
Problem. Like I could think like if a kid went into a vacant building and they had a fence up, stay out, condemned, you know, don't go in here and all this other kind of stuff. And the kid cut his way into the fence and went in, climbed around. Then he fell through a floor somewhere and got hurt. And his parents want to sue him for negligence for having that building.
Right.
The kid contributed to it because there was all these warnings and a fence and everything else, and he still went in.
Yeah, that could be an example. But there also, when you talk about something like that, you get into a whole trespass doctrine, and there's lots of case law about that, too. So.
Well, that's true. So maybe that wasn't a good example.
No, it's a good example.
Oh,
but there's other competing legal issues with regards to that scenario, too.
No, I don't want to get into competing legal issues. I'll lose on that count.
The next term is res ipsa loquitur.
That means the thing speaks for itself.
Exactly.
I knew that was going to be one. When you said that, I knew that was going to be one, and I tried to remember that and almost forgot it. So I hung in there. I had just enough brain cells left to bring that one up.
That's right. And basically, this res ipsa just is kind of used for a substitute for duty and breach. It's basically that the action happened, and therefore there must have been some sort of duty or breach that occurred in order for that accident to happen. And what that does is that sets up a prima facie case. And what does prima facie mean?
That means prima facie is first face. So that means that's the first thing you see. I don't know.
That's right. It creates kind of a rebuttable presumption that there was some sort of negligence like that. So
because of the fact that it happened.
Exactly. So,
well, now, if it was a barrel of beer, then I'd say you should have been alert and caught it. If a barrel of beer fell out a second story window, you wouldn't want that to go to waste by just hitting you on the head.
Yeah, I mean, if you drank a whole barrel of beer, it might have the same effect.
Well, that's true. You'd felt like you got hit on the head.
Well, that's going to do it for Legal Briefs. You did really well on this episode.
I got about 100, didn't I?
I'm not good at math, but I'd say 100.
Well, lawyers don't have to be good at math.
Nope.
Except for the bill.
That's right.
And the bill, they don't put a specific dollar amount, do they?
The bill? Like if I send out a bill?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I thought you just said pay a lot.
Pay a lot.
Yeah. Pay till it hurts. I'll let you know when it's enough.
Pay till it hurts, then pay some more. No, it's broken down into usually hours, like a 0.1 or a 0.2, and then you multiply that by an hourly rate, and then therefore you get attorney's fee. Well, that's going to do it for this episode.
So this one is part one for this sequence.
Yeah, I think we're going to follow it up with an episode that talks about shifting liability in contracts too, because we're kind of started talking about shifting liability with this case.
These will be sandwiched around our live show.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because we're going to do the live show next week.
Yep.
We're going to put that out.
Yep.
So be on the lookout for that. During the live show, we were as nasty as we want to be.
That's right. We were two live crew. We were two guys that were live and crude. Something like that. But we had fun, and I want to give a shout-out to the Columbus Podcast Festival.
Yes.
I mean, these guys were great hosts. It was their first festival ever, and you couldn't have told. They had everything taken care of and did a great job, so we had a good time.
Ran smooth. It was awesome. Great host.
Yeah, we flew Taylor in for Still Buffering. She flew in from New York, got in just a few hours before the show, then left the next morning, flew back to New York, so she's like our rock star that we fly in for these things. The rest of us just schlep in our SUVs from Huntington up to Columbus and back.
She's a jet-set podcaster.
That's right. No telling where she'll be. Look out for Tay.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Strong. And I am just a dude.
Thanks for listening.